The normal emotions are sadness and grief. We can't do anything about those, and we really don't want to do anything about those because those are part of the natural healing process that we all have to go through. Now, the emotions that are not normal are confusion, frustration, stress, and anger.
You're listening to Author Hour, enlightening conversations about books with the authors who wrote them. I'm Charlie Holm. Today's episode is with Jonathan Braddock, author of Click Here When I Die. Here's an awkward question for you. Do you have end-of-life plans? Most people avoid putting those together because they get overwhelmed by the logistics and they don't want to have awkward conversations. No one wants to leave their loved ones with a lifetime of belongings and information to sort through. But then again, no one wants to talk about death either. So how can you unburden your family members before it's too late? In this episode, Jonathan will help you thoughtfully prepare for your own passing, from wills and trusts to long-term healthcare and funeral costs. And now, here is our conversation with Jonathan Braddock.
It was 4 years ago, a beautiful Monday morning. My wife and I were actually playing golf, and on the fourth hole, her cell phone started ringing, and it was her niece who called, who she doesn't usually receive calls from, and we found out that Michelle's father had just passed away at home on the bedroom floor. Naturally, we left the balls where they lay and headed home, and took us about 30 minutes. They live about a mile up the street from where we were. And that sent a lot of wheels in motion. My father-in-law, Ted, was still on his bedroom floor when we arrived. The police obviously were there. The paramedics were there. And you're in a state of total shock. And it was the first time I'd experienced this, or my wife, with a close family member. And the questions start to flow, you know, such as, what funeral home should we take them to? Geez, you know, we don't know. There are several in town, and we're forced into making decisions from that point forward. Within 24 hours, we're sitting at a funeral home, getting marching orders from the funeral director. Obituaries have to be written. Is it going to be a cremation or a burial? Is it going to be a religious or a traditional ceremony? What about flowers? How many papers should we put the obituaries in? What places has he lived throughout his life that we might want to put an obituary in? And on and on. And such a completely overwhelming and stressful time in trying to think through and come up with all the answers and hope that we're doing what my father-in-law would have wanted. Because you see, he never really ever had the conversation with his daughter, my wife, with his own wife, as to what happens when he leaves. To flash forward to the end of that story, it took us in excess of 10 months to locate everything, close out all the details of his life. And during that process, it occurred to me that if something were to happen to Michelle and I, our children, who were all just college age and slightly beyond, would have no clue. They would have no idea where to locate documents, where we bank, what kind of accounts we have, proof of ownership. Do we have life insurance? Do my children, just going through college and stuff, really understand what life insurance is really all about, even? How are they going to locate it? They don't know who our attorney is or our accountant, much less are they going to be able to log into my technology, close down everything that's set up on auto pay or recurring payments, try and figure out the two newspapers that I read every day, which aren't delivered to the driveway. They're delivered to my iPad, Facebook, LinkedIn, Amazon Prime, Netflix. There's going to be a stinking mess on the front porch if they don't stop the subscription to the Blue Apron account, because meals continue to stack up. And so I thought something has to be done. And as I talked with people going through this process and explaining what we were going through, everyone wanted to share their stories with me. They said, geez, you know, when my mom passed or when I lost my brother, it went on. And everyone seems to experience the same thing. And I thought, man, as close as I can figure, people have been here for 300,000 years. And one thing remains true, that no one gets out of here alive. One out of one of us will, in fact, die.
It's a pretty high ratio. Yeah,
it's pretty good. I think they might have a cure for that someday, but you know, probably not within my lifetime.
TBD. Yeah. Wow.
Exactly. And so, if we can get our heads around the fact that we're all going to die at some point, why don't people talk about these things or plan for it? It's interesting, speaking with a person a week or so ago, it kind of made me think back to my childhood when I grew up, which was in the 60s and in the 70s. And I grew up in a small town called Medford, New Jersey, outside of Philadelphia. And, you know, life was simple then. We had screen doors. We didn't lock the house. You know, if mom and dad weren't home, you know, we came home from school, just walked right in. It was just a screen door, you know. Very simple time. There was one bank in town where everyone banked up the street. There was one attorney in town where most people worked with that individual. There was one funeral in town, and most people were buried in one of two cemeteries that were in town at that time. And if someone died, pretty much all aspects of their life could be found either in the desk drawer, in their home office, and any bills or obligations that these individuals had or where they banked, etc., would show up in the mailbox. That's it's for younger listeners, that's not the thing you're looking at on your computer. It's the thing that sits out front of the house. And, you know, that's where all the mail came. Bills, credit card statements, bank statements, any obligations a person had. And today, that's not the case. You know, I'm 55. The only thing I get in the physical mailbox out front of the house are, you know, coupons, pizza flyers, and birthday cards from my mother.
Right.
Nothing else shows up there. Everything is online. And so while back in the 60s, 70s, maybe even the 80s, when someone died, you could pretty much within a shorter period of time get through everything and figure it out. But technology, while making our lives so simple, has made our departure so much more complicated. Because people have to be able to find, locate, and access all this information.
Was that what you were doing over the course of, I think you said it was 10 months? Were you trying to locate information primarily?
We were. Ted was a saver. And, you know, I wouldn't say he was a hoarder, but he was a saver plus, shall we say. So he had a home office. And there were file cabinets just jam full, and there were boxes stacked on boxes and paper, and the man saved everything. So going through that process, we had to try and track down, you know, for the last, you know, 40 years of everything he saved, what was still active, what wasn't. In terms of, you know, life insurance, we found ourselves on the telephone contacting insurance companies for policies that were, you know, 20 years old or so, saying, are these insurance policies still in force? You know, to find out, no, that policy had been cashed in, whatever. So it starts this massive scavenger hunt for things. We found a safe deposit box key, but had no idea as to what financial institution it was located. So naturally, we went to the bank where he had his checking, his savings, homeowner's line of credit, went in and said, no, he doesn't have a savings account or a safety deposit box with us. That took us about a week to identify where the safe deposit box was located. Turns out it was in a bank on the other side of town where he had no other accounts. It's like, wow, you know, where's the will? Is there a will? And that took several weeks to locate within the papers. And, you know, then shockingly, after reading through it, you know, I said to my wife, I said, you know, well, I have some really bad news. I said, you're going to have to go to Milwaukee and live with Aunt Jean and Uncle Ed, because that's what the will stated. Now, if people pick up on my sense of humor there, that means his will hadn't been updated since the early 1960s.
Right.
Right. So things have changed, but that wasn't updated. Now, Ted was fairly computer savvy. He was an old IBM guy from back in the day. And so he did a lot of stuff online. However, trying to make sense of his login credentials, his usernames, his passwords that he kept just on a legal sheet and crossed out when he changed things, and his handwriting was extremely small, and trying to log in. But then the problem was, once we did identify where some of these accounts were and what was auto pay, we'd go to log in. Well, it didn't recognize the IP address. You know, we're logging in from somewhere different. Now it starts spitting challenge questions at you. You know, and who knew that Cliff was his best friend in junior high back in the, you know,
right,
late 30s, right? So that was another process that we had to go through. And it was just overwhelming. So it's this entire 10-month process, as I say, you know, while we're going through this. And fortunately, they were, you know, up the street, less than a mile from us. And I can only imagine if they lived in another state.
Yeah, you'd have to uproot your life.
Exactly. And for people, they need to understand, our employers are wonderful. You know, they give us some bereavement leave. Usually for an immediate family member like that, it could be 3 days, maybe as much as five.
Which seems like nothing when we're talking about all the things we're talking about. It's a disaster.
Oh, exactly. And when you have to start tracking this stuff down, you know, I'm talking about calling banks and insurance companies, et cetera, that's a 9-to-5 proposition when you're trying to speak with people. And the challenge now is, if I come back to work, yeah, my employer's not going to be too thrilled. I mean, they're going to have a little empathy, but they're not going to be too excited about me spending an hour or two of a day when I'm supposed to be doing company business and I'm doing personal business.
Right. Yeah.
To close things out. And I don't know, you know, I talk to my kids, et cetera. I stopped to think about all the online or digital identities that I have out there. You know, places that, you know, I purchase from, places that, you know, have, you know, my login information and accounts and all those kind of things. I have over 50, and I'm 55.
That's a small amount, because I use a service called Dashlane, which stores all your passwords. And I have this set up so that in case anything ever happened to me, a week later, my wife would get all those passwords. She could have access to everything and my payment information and everything. I have over 240 of these logins that you're talking about.
And can you imagine for the people? And it happens because, you know, we talk about death and, you know, newsflash, it's not just for old people. But think of someone like yourself who doesn't have a dash lane or, you know,
that's
a one
like
pass.
Everybody. Yeah.
Right. What is their family going to do? What's their spouse going to do? You know, I still have, it was funny, and I actually included it in my book when I was going to final publication of the book, and I'm talking with my editors. I had that morning gotten notification from LinkedIn because I've got a, you know, fairly active LinkedIn account. And so I go through my notifications and it's telling me to wish my friend Peter a happy birthday. And all I could do is just shake my head and go, I hope his other 500 plus connections know that he's no longer responding. Hey, thanks for the birthday wishes. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody, we all have people. I have 7 friends on Facebook who are deceased that still have active accounts out there.
Yeah.
And people I've talked to, I mean, you know, ultimately you can close those down. It took, you know, another person in our story, Caesar, it took him a year to close down his mother-in-law's Facebook account because she hadn't assigned a legacy contact into it. And, you know, we talk to people about, you know, why don't you be prepared? Why don't you, you know, think about it? And the answers are crazy, Charlie. They come back, they say, well, I have time. And my response
death
to that is,
death does not pick when you die.
Right?
So you don't pick when you die. Yeah.
Right. It's like, man, I wish I was you because apparently you know when you're going to die.
Right. Exactly.
You know, this is not taxes, you know. As I always say, it's like, you know, I can wait till April 15th. Without too much consequence, you know, probably a lot of stress, but without too much consequence to do my taxes and get them done because it's a date certain. I know that date, but I don't know when I'm going to die. No. You know, this morning, just in the United States alone, over 7,600 people woke up. Those 7,600 people expect they'll do the same thing tomorrow, but they won't. Mm-hmm. So we just don't know who to be. The other one it's I find humor in, it's bad luck to talk about death because I always try and have an answer for everything, right? Right. So my answer to that is we talk about sex, but that does not make us pregnant.
Right.
So talking about death isn't going to make us dead. And as I say, 40 years ago, maybe you didn't have to, you know, talk about it so much. But today, it's imperative. You know, when someone dies, there are normal emotions, not normal or unnecessary emotions. The normal emotions are sadness and grief. We can't do anything about those. And we really don't want to do anything about those because those are part of the natural healing process that we all have to go through. Now, the emotions that are not normal are confusion, frustration, stress, and anger.
Yep. And those happen a lot because of the circumstances that you're talking about.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Author Hour is sponsored by Book in a Box. For anyone who has a great idea for a book, but doesn't have the time or patience to sit down and type it out, Book in a Box has created a new way to help you painlessly publish your book. Instead of sitting at a computer and typing for a year, hoping everything works out, Book in a Box takes you through a structured interview process that gets your ideas out of your head and into a book in just a few months. To learn more, head over to bookinabox.com and fill out the form at the bottom of the page. Don't let another year go by where you put off writing your book. So, John, what I'm curious about, I'm not trying to cut you off at all, but what I'm curious about is what do people need to do? What are some of the steps that we can take this week that might make it 50% better for our spouse or our family in case we do pass away?
Well, I always start with one question. So I want the listener to think about this for themselves. What do you want the experience to be like for your family or fill in the blank, spouse, kids, etc., when you're gone? What do you want that experience to be like? Now, albeit there could be people out there who say, I'm gone, I don't care. Fine, we're not going to change their minds. But those that do truly care and want their family to be able to grieve properly without the anger, stress, frustration, they need to start planning. And it's a process. A lot of people say, it's so overwhelming, I'll never get through it. It's like, look at planning or being thoughtfully prepared, much like any weight loss program that we embark on. I mean, we see these all the time, right? And we all know the big names of the exercise gurus out there. Nobody is going to tell you that tomorrow morning you're going to wake up 20 pounds lighter. But they will tell you that if you do this, this, and this, in 12 weeks, you will be 20 pounds lighter. So think of planning more as that marathon. It's not a sprint. Do things a step at a time. My first suggestion is, have you clearly expressed your wishes to your family as to whether or not you want to be cremated or buried? Because a very good friend of mine, Nick, when we had a conversation a couple of years ago, he said, you know, I wish I had known Mom wanted to be cremated before I buried her. Now he lives with the memory of knowing that he didn't honor his mom's final wishes because he didn't have a conversation about it. So start with that, because there's nothing I can imagine worse in my life than I die. I haven't clearly spelled things out. And my kids, who already fight with one another, are really going to come to blows, because family's never going to agree. You know, we can't agree what movie to go see as a family, let alone should Dad be buried or cremated, what would he have wanted?
So I've experienced this multiple times. I'm 31, and I have seen family members pass, and it create the exact things that you're describing, confusion, anger. I've changed my standpoint because of witnessing these fights, like a dying person's wish about their preference of being buried or cremated. They're not here to express that. Like, let go of your guilt that you have around this topic and just move on. And I know that other people have a difficult time with carrying that around. I'm curious why you recommend burying versus cremation first. Is it just because it's the first thing that they have to deal with as soon as the person passes away?
It's the first decision that you will have to make, or your family will have to make. Obviously, they don't have to make.
Yeah, and it's one, if you can, if it does create animosity in your family, that can be one that can have spillover and carry on for a long time if you get that decision wrong, I guess, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The next piece of that is, because, you know, funeral homes are great, and funeral directors, God love them, I could never, you know, do that kind of business. And they're wonderful. But, you know, while you're sitting there, and at one moment while they're, you know, expressing just how sorry they are for your loss, the other hand is
upsell,
slipping the bill. Yeah, exactly. So it has to be paid for. Statistically, over 50% of family tend to have to put out money up front to cover costs. And many times they never recoup that back. So, you know, do you have life insurance? Because life insurance is wonderful, but only if people know you have it. There's been over $1 billion in life insurance that has gone unpaid in the United States. That's because beneficiaries didn't know the policy existed. So, you know, what do you want? Burial, cremation? Great. How's it going to be paid for? Hey, I've got this life insurance policy. Great. Where are your life insurance policies? Don't send me on a scavenger hunt. Just tell me you have a life insurance policy with this company and this company.
So your life insurance can pay for the funeral?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know that.
You know, you're not going to... Yeah, life insurance is paid tax-free to a beneficiary. So if you have it... Now, granted, if the funeral home needs to be paid tomorrow or in the next 30 days, you may not have that money. But I feel much better about you know, handing my credit card or writing a check or going into my savings to pay for it, knowing that life insurance is coming and it's going to cover that cost. I'm going to get my money back. Then after, you know, that first, you know, week, the other thing too, this is, you know, I always, well, I think it's funny, your listener may not, but make some, you know, eulogy notes and obituary notes. You know, within 24 hours, a family starts scrambling to write an obituary. And you struggle because you try and think of all the things the person has accomplished or done in their life that you want included in the paper. My mother-in-law, Marie, still usually about every other month, says to Michelle, my wife, I want to do the obituary again. Can we write the obituary again? Because we didn't include this, this, and this. So she's like, no, Mom, we're not doing the obituary again. But so put down notes. Are there people that you would want notified? You know, maybe an old college roommate, someone who's, you know, in another state who may not find out about it or see an obituary. And then I like to write my own eulogy notes because, for God's sakes, if you're going to say something about me, I want it to be nice. But then after you get past that whole first week and you've got that stuff done, then the important things that people need to know are, let people know, you know, about your, you know, financial life. Where are your bank accounts? What do you have there? Where are your credit cards? You know, any other documents? Make sure if there's a will, people know where it's located. Make sure if it's in the safe deposit box that people know there's a key and it's in your upper desk drawer and it's at this financial institution. You know, write the blueprint, if you will, for your family so they don't go on this massive scavenger hunt to try and locate everything. Make it simple for them.
John, do you know where we might find a template, a blueprint template?
I do. At my website, which is mylifeandwishes.com, people can connect with a checklist. Download a checklist. We also have a ebook that's there, which is called The 10 Things You Need to Know, which is a wonderful guide to get people started. It talks about things like funeral, important papers and documents, social media, certainly, even pets. You know, many people don't think about that. And, you know, what's going to happen to Fluffy, you know, when you're no longer here? And so there's some really good resources to get people started down that path. You know, my book, obviously, it's a quick read. We've taken, you know, a fairly serious topic, but made it light. Hopefully, you know, your listeners can pick up. I do have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
When we're talking about death, you have to, right?
Totally. And I gave your book as a gift to my mother-in-law, because she recently had to experience a lot of this, and she thought the book was really funny. She told my wife and I some of the jokes that you used in the book. She thought it was very humorous.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I'm happy to hear that, which is why I wanted to do it that way. You know, it's not doom and gloom. You know, it's going to happen to all of us. So why not talk about it? You know, it's one of those things. You know, I'm not going to tell my college age kids everything today, but I have everything organized in such a way that, you know, and I hope I don't die for, you know, 50 years. Mm-hmm. And I have everything organized in such a way that it's an awesome tool for me right now, because I have everything in, you know, one place and everything is stored and I can keep it up to date. And it makes my life so much easier to manage right now. I've taken all the chaos. And for my kids, you know, the conversation doesn't have to list everything out. You know, it can be, look, here's the deal, guys. We're all going to die. I'm going to die someday. When that happens, in my upper dresser drawer, the right-hand side, under the socks, there's an envelope. You can go in it at that time. It's going to provide you the roadmap to everything that you're going to need.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about how I would execute this personally with my family. I'm already thinking, like, this is not that overwhelming. Like, I have Dashlane already in place. all I need to do is put together a Google Doc, share it with my wife, and make it an easy to find thing on our Google Drive, and we're good. And we can update it over time.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a, you know, as I say, I tell people all the time, you know, we have a platform, which is at mylifeandwishes.com, that people can utilize. It's very intuitive, guides people step by step. We look at it as our virtual vault, especially on the heels of, you know, natural disasters, a couple of which we've just experienced with Harvey and Irma, you know. So people say, yeah, I've got everything in a desk drawer. It's all good to go. It's like, oh, God, let's just hope there's not a fire,
right,
a flood. You know, in my virtual vault, I have everything. I have the ability. I upload my documents. I've uploaded my will. It's in there. I've uploaded insurance policy. So wherever I am, my stuff is, and it's protected from natural disaster. And again, I don't care whether people use my platform or not. What I care about, when this happened to me, I said, you know, I want to help at least 1 million people in the United States alone avoid the pain that we went through. That's all I want to do, because it's totally avoidable. So whether you know, create a Google Doc, whether you write it down on a legal pad, just make sure you put that somewhere really safe and secure,
right,
but get it done. Plan. You're doing it for love, and then just make sure somebody knows about it, because you don't want to go through all that effort and then no one knows about it, and then people make all these decisions for you, and a year later they find it and they say, oh, crap, we did this all wrong.
Yeah, and I think it's really practical and healthy to talk about this with your entire family, because it's going to happen. At some point, it's going to hit you in some way that you did not expect, and then you're going to have that conversation anyway. Why not just have it now and have it be a thing that you all go through in a healthier way? When it does arrive, when an aunt or an uncle or a grandma or grandpa passes away, inevitably, why not experience that together and learn from it and help each other? I think that's really healthy and super practical. So,
right.
John, I'm curious, your book has been out for, looks like about 4 months now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about some of the feedback that you've gotten from people who've made these changes and how it's impacted them.
You know, it's really interesting. The feedback has been, you know, nothing short of phenomenal to me, because when people email me or call or I hear stories, we actually put a blog on our website. I believe it was last week, Ellen's story. This is a woman who contacted us after reading the book. And it was from a friend. Now, I'm trying to get the story right because I didn't actually write the blog, but we had the conversation. So a friend gave her a copy of the book, said, here, you need to read this. And she sat down and she read through the book. Ellen's husband was going in for surgery later that week, and they're in their 80s. And after reading the book, she realized that her husband took care of everything because they're of that generation. She didn't know where things were, anything else. So she went to her husband and literally tossed the book at him and said, you need to read this. And he's like, yeah, right. So that night, apparently he was having some difficulty sleeping because he was thinking about the surgery coming up and those kind of things. So he got up and he started reading the book. Now the book, as you know, is about, depending how fast you read, an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's short reading. Took him over 4 hours to go through the book because he was making notes for his wife as he was reading through all the things that if he didn't make it through the surgery, she would have the answers to, which is like, wow, you know. And the positive side of the story is he did in fact make it through the surgery. He's great. And now they're prepared and they're organized, which is wonderful. The thing is, people don't realize they're going to have this problem until the problem hits them right in the face.
Right.
So that's why I say, read the book. It'll cause you to act. We had a contact from another fellow who's actually an attorney who thought he had all his, you know, ducks in a row, if you will. And after reading the book, and his name's Rick, Rick came back and said, never thought about life insurance. Never thought about how to connect my kids, you know, with the pension that he has. Never thought about providing the access to his technology, his iPad, his computer, where he had other documents stored. And he actually then got all his stuff organized, put together, and he called his daughter and had his daughter come to town for the weekend and went through everything with her and laid it all out. And Rick's 72, 73, and he finally feels good. So even, you know, an attorney who thought he had everything hadn't thought about all the little things, you know, even the social media accounts. Our lives are so complicated. But if we stop and think about all the pieces, and as you say, just lay them out, put them together, it's not that hard. You don't have to have it done by tomorrow morning. But my challenge, you know, to the listener is kind of within 90 days, make a commitment to yourself, because effectively you're making that commitment to your family. Within 90 days, make that commitment to have all your, you know, all these tentacles of your life reeled in and put in one easy to use place so that your family can properly grieve when that time comes. And they don't have to go through the stress and the pain. Yeah. And hopefully it doesn't happen for a long time. And the good news is you've got all that stuff organized for you. You'll feel free, you know?
Right. Yeah. I love that. That's a great challenge. I'm going to partake in that myself. So thank you, John. This has been awesome. How can our listeners follow you and stay connected with you?
Several ways. First, if anyone ever wants to reach out to me, I am one of those people that I respond to all my own emails, usually within 24 hours. My email address is John, J-O-N, at mylifeandandwishes.com. You can connect with us on Facebook and from our website, My Life and Wishes. You can subscribe to our newsletter, read our blogs, ton of resources, and again, connect with us there on Facebook and Twitter and just stay in contact. And, you know, for people who, you know, read our book, I just would be so honored if people would just email me their thoughts on the book.
This is something I continually have to remind readers of, is that most authors never hear from their readers how their book impacted them. They just don't. So if this podcast affected you and changed your behavior in any way or got you thinking about life and death a little bit differently, definitely send John an email. Just, it can even be two sentences, but that is a really valuable thing that you can do to thank him.
That would be great. And I love hearing the stories, you know, just as you mentioned, giving the book to your mother-in-law. And, you know, as you say, she loved it and she even thought I was funny. So I'll take that.
That's all men want, really, right? At the end of the day, we just want to be funny. And
exactly.
So you accomplish that in writing, which is no easy task. So, John, this was great. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Many thanks to Jonathan Braddock for being on the show. You can buy his book, Click Here When I Die, on Amazon.com. Thanks again for listening to Author Hour, enlightening conversations about books with the authors who wrote them. We'll see you next time.